Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, before we begin, I'd like to give a quick shout out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity to give a huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So a huge round of thank yous to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, Coach J-Ro, and Geek Beardly for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine for more information. And you can pick up your very own MTG in Quarantine branded playmat over at Inked Gaming, that is I-N-K-E-D gaming.com. Have two really awesome options to pick from, both the full color logo as well as the monochrome. They both look really awesome, and you should definitely pick one up for you and for your friends. You can find those links in the link tree and the episode description. And again, all you need to do is go over to Inked Gaming, that's I-N-K-E-D gaming.com, and search MTG in Quarantine. Today's episode of the podcast is going to be about under and completely unsupported tribes in EDH. And again, we define tribe here as a certain creature type. And in order to talk about this subject, I wanted to bring back a really good friend on the show and patron, Coach J-Ro. Welcome back, J-Ro.
Hey there, great to be back. Thanks for having me.
No problem. So before we begin, I know that this is a subject you talk about a lot on your Quote of Arms podcast. Do you want to tell the listeners out there a little bit more about this project?
Absolutely. So my Quote of Arms podcast is just put out its 40th episode this week. It is a podcast that's centered around creature types, where people come out and talk about their favorite creature types, what the members are like, what the strategies are like, and then what's their personal connection. I've had some fairly famous people on there, including Sheldon Mennery, Dana Fisher, Ashlyn Rose. That's some pretty big names on there, and it's a pretty awesome podcast if you ever have a chance to check it out. I'm also in the process, along with Crow from Children of Alara, who is my editor, of moving that podcast onto YouTube with graphics to go along with it.
Nice. I think that at some point I'm going to have to try to get on your show to talk about one of the decks that we're going to be discussing here today. But again, that's neither here nor there for the moment, because we will be talking a lot about this concept right here, right now. So if you're ready, J-Ro, I think it's safe to say it's time to move on to the first little bit of our episode. And again, just like I said at the outset of the show, this episode is going to be dedicated to under or completely unsupported tribes in EDH. Again, these being creature types, and we kind of loosely define this as creature types that generally don't have a whole lot or any, in some cases, printed support. And again, this is going to be defined by something like a lord or some sort of a blanket effect that a lot of the more popular creature types, vampires, dragons, werewolves, you know, goblins, etc., have a whole bunch of support printed for. But, you know, there's a whole ton of creature types that don't really have that kind of support. And today's episode is dedicated to all those tribal underdogs, in a way, or in, even if we don't want to necessarily say tribal, kind of the underdog creature types that may have some cards out there, may have been around for years, but don't necessarily get the same amount of love from Wizards of the Coast as the more popular tribes. So again, I guess it's a little, this episode is dedicated to all the tribes that are still out there trying to make a name for themselves. They just haven't quite found that niche yet, but not to say they won't eventually.
To an extent, I'm not sure all of these will be supported in some way. Some of them are just, they're present on a plane. They provide some sense of the atmosphere of the plane, but they're not necessarily integral to the story, and that's fine. But it's cool to think of, okay, what would a deck of this look like? How can we take these individual members and create something where they have a feeling of whatever it is that they are? How do we evoke that?
Okay, yeah. So basically what you're saying here, Jairo, is that you're trying to find kind of a line between the certain creatures of a certain creature type where and trying to find out if there's any sort of synergy between them, any sort of line that basically says if this creature type is X, it's most likely going to do something related to whatever that is. We see this a lot with the more popular tribes where a lot of the creatures fall under similar categories. They do a lot of very similar things. Vampires typically worry about life gain, life loss. Dragons all have flying and typically have some, you know, dragon-related ability. Goblins usually care about other goblins hitting the battlefield and attacking. Just things that really say this effect really belongs to this tribe and helps it really feel unique.
Some of the supported tribes have that built into their identity, usually in a mechanical sense. But it can also be done with the support cards. So, for example, elves like to go wide. And we know this not just because of the ability to make mana dorks, the presence of a lot of lords, but also cards like Elvish Promenade, which make a bunch of tokens, which furthers this idea that they want to go wide as opposed to tall. So sometimes it's the support instance and sorceries that can help to build that archetype identity.
Okay, so now that we've talked a little bit about our thesis for this episode, do you want to get us started, Jairo, on the first example that you've pulled from your personal collection of a deck where you run an undersupported tribe in kind of a unique way?
Sure. Well, the background of this was that I saw you play a certain deck, and we can talk about that when you're ready.
We definitely will.
But there's a particular deck that you played on one of my streams. I think it was one of my tribal streams, and it just piqued my interest. Now, I have some decks that have unusual tribes, and they were built from different ways. For example, I have Jawari, the Earth of Flame, Earthquake Tribal. But that was built before I saw the deck that you're going to talk about. That one was actually built because I initially wanted to build a Roisin Meanderer deck, because I really liked that commander ever since it came out in Shadowmoor, but I just couldn't figure out how to build it. So I wound up getting together all my Axe spells and realized, you know what, there are enough Fireball and Earthquake effects. I could just make a deck out of that. So I wound up building Jawari Earthquakes, and its sort of sister deck is, Roisin is technically female, the sort of sister deck is Roisin Hydras. They were kind of built together, one out of the scraps of the other. But the first deck that I built that was based off of your deck was Hamza. Hamza, Guardian of Arushin, Elephant Tribal. So, how do I build around elephants? So elephants have a number of vanilla creatures. A lot of them are either 3 mana 3/3s, 4 mana 3/3s, something along those lines. It wasn't really a greatly supported tribe, because they were just kind of normal creatures that happened to appear in a few different planes. There was a little bit of support for +1/+1 counter strategies from Kaladesh, as well as from Hamza itself. So how do I get this pack feeling? This feeling of elephants work together and make each other stronger. The way that I thought of to do that was the support mechanic. I put a number of green and white support cards from Battlebond. There we go.
Battlebond, yeah.
So a number of support cards from Battlebond went in there because I wanted to further this idea of the elephant pack supports each other, grows together, and that's essentially how they behave in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
It also helps Hamza, works with the +1/+1 counter synergies, and helps to provide a way to win. Then I wanted to figure out, okay, I don't think elephants wrap the board, but they are very sturdy creatures. They're very good at surviving. They have thick skin. how do I portray that? I don't want to have wrath effects, but when I'm building a deck, I usually have a certain amount of mass removal effects. Or I would also consider anti-mass removal in that same category. If somebody uses a Wrath of God and my creatures don't die in that Wrath of God, it's almost like I cast it. So there are 10 different ways to have my creatures survive board wipes in there. Because green and white have a lot of those effects. Some of them are ways to have the creatures come right back out of the graveyard. Some of them are ways to grant indestructibility, like with heroic intervention. Some of them are mass regeneration, like Rabban Vigor. But they're all ways to avoid my board getting wiped, because that's what elephants do. So the deck was fairly strong. It actually stood up to one of so Gashan Upkeep is a member of my Skull Symbol server who likes to play control decks, especially ones with heavy control elements like board wipes. It actually stood up to him and managed to take him out of a game. So I was surprised at how well that deck managed to acquit itself. But that just goes to the fact that the deck was well built, and it really got the feeling of what it's like to fight against a pack of elephants. They're resilient. They keep coming back and coming back, and they support each other and make each other stronger.
Yeah, that's really cool. I guess I hadn't thought of that before, but now that you mention that, yeah, that really fits with the elephant creature type. And again, yeah, green and white are perfect colors for a lot of reasons for that sort of deck. A lot of reanimation, a lot of heroic intervention type effects. It just seems like a really good combination along with support cards to really make a good deck all about getting a lot of elephants out there and just putting a lot of counters on them.
Yeah, it's actually one where if I ever did, I like to do a lot of charity streams. And one of the ones I've been thinking of doing, because I've seen this done before, is one done for the Wildlife Federation. That would be a good deck to feature on something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
The World Wildlife Federation. That is one of them. Do you want to talk about the deck that inspired this to this deck building?
Yeah, for sure. So I know that my listeners out there have listened to me talk about an awful lot of the decks that I've built over the last couple of years. And you probably would say, well, you know, MJ, you built Kothafed, you talk about Kothafed a lot, you built Selenia, Colorless Najeela, some of my weird CDH stuff, just a whole bunch of really cool decks. But one of the decks that I actually don't talk about is the one that really, I guess, in J-Ro's mind at least, really started off this idea and really got us to want to talk about this particular topic. So I guess a year ago or so, Commander Legends comes out. We get now CDH All-Star Malcolm Keen-Eyed Navigator, who is a Siren Pirate 2/2 flyer. Whenever one or more pirates you control deal damage to your opponents, you create a treasure token for each opponent dealt damage and has partner. So in CDH, Malcolm is really good for going infinite with Glinthorn Buccaneer or other various other cards, or, you know, just being a value engine. And as interesting as that sounded, I kind of wanted to try something different with Malcolm. I knew a lot of people at the time were pairing him with Breaches, which makes perfect sense. You know, a lot of Orthos things, cool things going on there with that. But I've never been quite, you know, wanting to do what everyone else is doing. I wanted to do something completely different. So I went to EDH Rec and started looking for tribal types and found that while there's a lot of pirate decks out there, and for good reason, I couldn't find any siren decks. And really what got me interested in building this deck was a card called Alluring Siren that was sitting in my box of chaff. Alluring Siren is a 1/1 siren costing 1 and a blue and has a tap ability. It says target creature an opponent controls attacks you this turn if able. And I've been sitting around trying to figure out exactly how I wanted to use this card. Then I found my copy of Malcolm in the chaff box and thought, you know, a lot of the sirens have abilities, obviously based upon their use in ancient mythology, as basically luring sailors to their doom. And a lot, if not most, of the siren cards that have been released in Magic's history have some sort of common thread here. A lot of them fly, if not all, actually, I think all of them fly, for obvious reasons. And a lot of them have something to do with forcing combat. Obviously, we're seeing a lot of goad mechanics right here, but the siren cards don't have goad as a keyword mechanic. It wasn't either evergreen then, or they just said force your opponent's creatures to attack. So I really started to think about, how can I start to bring all of these creatures together, make a tribal deck so that I can be potentially the first person in, you know, in history, I guess, to make a siren tribal EDH deck, but also tried to find a way that I can actually play sirens without making it feel like I was basically just jamming a whole bunch of random unrelated creatures that just shared a creature type in a deck. And obviously my local EDH meta, my play group plays a very, very combat focused EDH meta. And it is what we really enjoy playing. It's made for some very entertaining games. And I felt kind of like, you know, this deck could take advantage of a lot of the combat focused games that we have and really kind of turn it on its head a little bit, you know, force people to attack instead of just sitting around and doing nothing. So really what the deck is trying to do is get a bunch of sirens out, which can attack and, you know, do some damage to my opponents. I have a few things in there to give them extra stats, etc., etc. But really what I'm trying to do is force my opponents to attack either myself or others, and then be able to utilize a whole bunch of punishment payoffs to try to deal them damage. So I'm running everything like Blood Reckoning, which is an enchantment costing 3 and a black, reads, whenever a creature attacks you or a planeswalker you control, that creature's controller loses 1 life. So if, let's say you have 10 goblin tokens on your side of the battlefield. I utilize one of my siren effects to force all of your creatures to attack me. Well, all of a sudden, now you don't have a choice to attack me. I'm going to take 10 probably, but you're going to also take 10. I'm running Marchesa's Decree, which does a similar thing. Revenge of Ravens does another thing where I gain life as the player who has it. Hissing Miasma. So I'm running 4 of the exact same kind of effects of black enchantments that force you to lose life every time you attack me. So I'm going to force you to attack. It can be me, but I'm going to punish you if you try to come at me. And really, what's really brutal about this deck is some of the extra effects I'll throw in here too. So I'm running a copy of No Mercy in here. It's an enchantment costing 2 black black, a very old card back from the Urza's block, and says whenever a creature successfully deals damage to you, destroy it. This is a card that I've been sitting on, at least idea-wise, for a couple of years, and thought, you know, if I'm forcing people to attack me, what better than to blow up the creatures that they're hitting me with? Honestly, my creatures are not going to block too well, but if they don't have to block, I can blow up my opponent's creatures and then try to swing. I'm running various cards like Mirror Match, where I create tokens of my opponent's creatures, put them on the battlefield. And again, another nice way to do a removal spell. I'm running Sudden Spoiling, Polymorphous Jess, Aetherize, Aether Spouts, a whole bunch of cards that force attacking creatures to basically be turned into nothing or be returned to their owner's hands. And again, especially Aether Spouts and Aetherize for you, Jaira, I know that you really enjoy your unsummon effects. I know you really enjoy those kinds of cards. Oh yeah.
Aether Spouts, I believe, was to the top or bottom.
Yeah, but yeah, it's still just ways to be able to remove your opponent's creatures. And I love this ability because I'm forcing you to attack. If you want to attack me, it's going to cost you dearly in a lot of cases. And I'm running a lot of really interesting cards underneath it here. There's a kind of a funny card called Keep Watch. It was out, I don't remember which set it was out from, but it's an instant for
a while. It's in some cases it's considered a staple card because it doesn't care who anybody attacks. It's one of the staple card draws of Commander, actually, even though it's sort of fallen off a little bit, kind of like Black Market has.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of the early staples of the format, so it's been printed in a number of different Commander decks.
Okay, yeah, that's actually really interesting. But yeah, it's definitely not a card I've really ever seen anybody else play in the time I've been playing. And it's a instant for two and a blue and says draw a card for each attacking creature. And again, like J-Ro just mentioned, it doesn't matter who the one person is attacking, but you know, if you're attacking me, I could try to draw 6 to 8 cards off of this and try to refill my hand, get some removal, you know, just be able to get the cards in my hand that I need to be able to, you know, make this deck work. And I'm running enough pirates in the deck, things like, obviously Changeling Outcast is just in this list just because it's kind of funny, but I'm running some flashy pirates in there. So Crafty Cutpurse is in here to mess with my opponents, creating tokens. I'm running Direfleet Poisoner in here to give Malcolm Death Touch until end of turn to make sure that I can get the treasure trigger on there. I'm running just various different pirate support cards in there to try to be able to get triggers off of Malcolm. And what I really enjoy about Falthus in particular is the fact that she provides Malcolm with Menace and Death Touch. So all of a sudden, every time I swing in with Malcolm, I'm getting pretty much guaranteed one treasure per turn cycle. And again, that doesn't sound like much in the current meta, but again, in this sort of deck, one treasure could make a lot of difference, especially when I'm really kind of behind the curve in terms of creature quality here. Let's not really... I really can't sugarcoat this. A lot of the Sirens really suck for stats, you know, in today's EDH, but I just really enjoy sticking to that theme. And this deck has actually done all right in the few times that I played in my playgroup. Again, nothing special, but I feel like in the right kind of pod, this deck could actually really frustrate some people and actually make for some really, really interesting games. And if nothing else, it was a very fun little theme project that I've just had sitting around for a while, where it demonstrates the concept of taking an undersupported tribe, or in this case, a tribe that basically doesn't have any support, because Malcolm cares about pirates. Malcolm does not care about sirens. So I'm taking the sirens, I'm taking a couple of pirates that I feel kind of work with the theme of flashing creatures in to try to take care or try to take advantage of really good one-turn abilities, and just, you know, try to be able to piece together a victory by hopefully having my opponents attacking each other rather than me. So it's kind of a risky strategy, but, you know, it's one of those EDH decks that I really enjoy thinking through, building, and then playing a few times, even if it's not something that I will play with on a regular basis.
Yes.
Wow, that was a really long-winded explanation.
Yeah, that was really cool. I especially like how you were talking about how they are playing a number of effects that punish people for attacking you. Because while No Mercy is relatively expensive from being on the reserve list, some of those other cards that punish the attacks, like Hissing Miasma, are really cheap. They're like draft chaff cards.
Yeah, it's $1 according to Moxfield right now, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They work well with the strategy that you're using, and they sort of bring new life to old cards. And that's one of my favorite things about the Commander format, is when you can bring new life to old cards or evaluate cards from a new set in a unique way. So one of my decks that I built along that philosophy of looking at old cards in a new way is my Homunculus deck. So Homunculi have existed in a few different places, most notably at Ravnica with Thibethip, who's one of the few legendary commander or legendary Homunculi. There's another one that's based on coin flips, but Fibblethip's my commander there because he's cheap, draws cards, and is kind of a jump blocker, and keeps finding himself in weird and awkward situations because he's kind of hilarious. But the deck is designed around transmutation. So I'm looking at how Homunculi were used in like Full Metal Alchemist. So what I do for the deck is I have Homunculi that just kind of exist on the board, and they're kind of tiny little dinky dudes. Some of them, like Humungulus, are actually bigger. But what I do with the deck is I have cards that transmute, or that do what I call transmutation, which is turning them into something else. So one of the cards that does that is True Polymorph. An artifact or creature becomes a copy of another target artifact or creature. that one's a little bit more specific, but like Startling Development was a card from Ikoria that turns a creature into a serpent with base power and toughness 4/4. Now, in terms of like playing that card, I doubt anybody actually used it for that outside of maybe Limited. It has cycling one, which is probably all it ever did for a lot of people. But in this deck, what I do is turn a creature into something like a 4/4, and then I have cards that can turn all of my creatures into a copy of target creature. So okay. Now all of my homunculi are 4/4s.
Nice.
So I go through the small level transmutations and then the big transmutations. There was, I think I've attacked for 36 in one combat with a bunch of homunculi.
Oh, wow.
And I screenshotted the board because I don't think I was ever going to, I didn't think I was ever going to have a chance to do that again. One of the cards I have in there to make my homunculi a little bit faster is Reflections of Lachara. Mm-hmm. And that was a card that was inspired by another mutual friend of ours in the Skull Symbol. So that was inspired by... So I'm going to make sure I am...
Yeah, for sure.
Properly.
Yeah. While you're looking that up, that's really cool that you're able to make a whole... Ben. Ben. Yep.
Ben Doolittle. Yep. But what were you saying?
Oh, no, I was just saying that it's really cool that you're able to take Homunculus, which, again, another tribe where people don't really give much of a thought about it, and be able to turn them into big, chonky attackers to do a lot of damage. That's not something you normally think about, again, outside of Homunculus.
Mm-hmm. It's really cool. Whenever a new set came out, and there was actually one that just came out in New Capenna, I would look for, okay, are there any new blue cards that change stats? So the one from New Capenna was Majestic Metamorphosis. 3 mana, instant until end of turn, target artifact or creature becomes a 4/4 angel with flying, draw a card. Well, turning a homunculus into that is pretty good game. And then turning all of my homunculi into 4/4 angels and drawing a card is pretty nice too.
Oh yeah. No doubt.
So homunculus beatdown.
Yeah, it's crazy how you're able to take, again, another tribe like Homunculus and make it legitimately scary, and not just because Fibblethip can combo off. You're taking Fibblethip and putting it in a completely different direction that no one would see coming.
Yep. Well, and I'm trying to make it evoke what a Homunculus is, which is usually an artificial life form constructed scientifically that winds up being the subject to various experiments.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, mad scientist deck builder is going to make a bunch of experiments.
Oh yeah, for sure, for sure.
Yeah. Another one of my decks, another one of my weird tribal decks is Uvilda, Dean of Perfection.
Okay.
This is a Jin tribal deck.
Nice.
I could have kept it mono blue, and I was thinking about it, but there's a slight red splash, which is why I use Uvilda. Because Uvilda has the backside of Nasari, Dean of Expression. I won't actually cast Nasari because it's an Efreet that goes against my deck's philosophy. But... I needed the ability to put red into the deck so that I could finish, or so I could have a critical mass of copies of things that I needed. So this deck is a deck with, so it's a genie deck, or djinn deck as they're known in Magic. What this deck does is it has no mass removal, but it doubles up on spot removal because I wanted to stay thematic. So it has cards that put things to sleep. Sleep in Magic is usually defined as tapping it and keeping it from untapping. And it also has polymorph effects. Not the transmutation of homunculi, but if I want things removed, I'm either going to put it to sleep or I'm going to polymorph it. Why do I polymorph it? Because it's hilarious. So
everybody loves a good polymorph.
You want this card removed? Okay, I'll remove it, but what comes up might be worse. Your wish is my command.
Oh, J-Ro, that is perfect. Oh man. You know that as soon as you say that, just, you know, I know this is a deck that you built, but damn, does this sound like a J-Ro deck. Wow. 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 Just applause, everybody. Wow. Wow.
Well, one of the things that I love about these decks is that while they are good and they are built by me, so they're going to function because I have that mathematical deck building mind, they're also a lot of fun to play and to play with and against. And because they are lower power, I can play them with some of the newer members of my Skull Symbol. I can play them against precons, and I know that they're not going to blow anything out of the water. But I could also play them against higher power things and know that they are going to function, that they're going to have some of the hate drawn away from themselves because they are so quirky. And it's a lot of fun to play them like that.
For sure.
So the last one to talk about is Galia of the Endless Dance. So this is one that I actually had a little bit of trouble building. But I wanted to make a green and red travel deck that wasn't just ramp and that did some silly things. So Galia is actually a lord, so it's pretty much the only card that actually helps satyrs. There's a planeswalker that makes satyrs. There's a sorcery that makes a lot of satyr tokens. But there's really nothing that says this is what satyrs are or do. But in the art of Galia, as well as in kind of the art of a lot of these cards, satyrs are partiers. They want to do crazy, hilarious things. So how do I build a deck that's crazy and hilarious and parties?
Chaos deck! Boop, boop, boop!
It's a little bit chaos, a little bit group hug. It combines those two philosophies together. Chaos and group hug.
Wow, that...
So the down... What were you saying?
Sorry. That is actually not two things I thought I would hear in the same sentence, but please continue.
Okay. So, the group hug aspect is providing people extra lands, helping people like build and support their boards in some ways. But the chaos element is, hey, remember all those lands I gave you? What if I damaged you for each land you can?
Uh-oh, I see where this is going.
Price of Progress is in there.
Oh, yeah, that is brutal, especially if people are running on basics. See, kids, this is the reason why you should probably run more basics.
Yeah. There's a number of effects that are based on randomness.
Mm-hmm.
There's Wheel of Misfortune. There's Chef's Kiss. Just some hilarious cards that are based on that. There's also some cards that allow me to help others out that also include randomness, like Draconian Silex, which you discard a card at random to regenerate a target creature. I can regenerate anybody's creature, and I don't care what I discard because it's random anyways.
Okay.
Disrupt Decorum just to have chaos happen.
Yeah.
But Heartbeat of Spring and Eldamri's Vineyard are both in there, and they support cards like Nexus Wardens, which is a satyr, and you gain 2 life whenever you make an enchantment. So there's a lot of enchantments in there, a lot of randomness and chaos. Treacherous Terrain deals damage to each opponent equal to the number of lands they control. Mm-hmm. Scrambleverse makes things nutty. Just a lot of chaotic elements that go along with the So they go along with the with the group hug aspect. So I help everybody by providing them with cards and lands and such, by protecting their creatures if they need it. And then I also bring a chaotic element to the game. And it can win out of nowhere with a lot of direct damage that hits everybody.
Yep. It's, if it's not, well, I mean, what I'm trying to say is that it's gruel. You're still burning them. You're burning their lands down, you know, with fireball type things, you know, you're, yeah, that is a really cool idea, is you're forcing everyone to get lands out of their decks, and then you're just bopping them over the head with it. That's crazy.
So Galia is a lot of fun to play with because it basically has everybody partying until all hell breaks loose.
Yeah, I mean, there isn't a party like a Seder party, I would say. Yeah. I mean, heck, they made a card called Eidolon of the Great Rebel, which I believe is a Seder. Am I right on that?
Probably a spirit.
Okay, dang. Otherwise, I mean, but it should be a Seder, right? You know, it falls along that same line, though. It definitely does a lot of direct damage too. So, you know, legacy staple.
Yeah, it's a spirit.
Yeah. Okay. But I mean, it feels like it should be a Seder card, right?
It feels like it supports what the Seder's like, and I think they're in the card itself. There's a bunch of Seders dancing around it.
Okay. Yeah. So it's not the Seders in the art; it is the actual flames.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was wondering about that, and that's why I guess I incorrectly identified it as a Seder card, because I every time I see the art, I immediately look at the Seders, and I don't look at the fire they're dancing around. So. Yeah. Oh, well.
Nice. So yeah, those are all different decks that I have built using my mathematical philosophy, which is I look for 10 of a particular card effect. And that's how I decide if there's enough to build something. For tribal decks, I usually look for, are there 20 members of that tribe? And the place where I look at them is there's a creature type list that was created by Smiley Lich. And it has the number of them, the colors, then the amount broken down by color, and the amount of legendaries. And there are different ways to look up the individual members. But I very much enjoy that I can see how much support there is, how much support in particular colors, and use that to figure out if there's enough to build on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just, before you sent this, yeah, so before the show, J-Ro sent me over the link to this website, and it's actually really interesting to be able to see exactly what's in there, because it gives you the creature type, the number of counts of the number of creatures that have that identity or that subtype, the colors that they're typically found in, and then a breakdown between Wooburg effectively for each color, colorless, as well as legendary. And I think that's really cool right there, especially if you're looking to try to find a commander that is a certain kind of under-supported creature type. The fact you can look up the number of legendaries there is kind of interesting, because then you too can go in and actually try to figure out if that's something you want to follow, if you want to make a creature tribal deck based on that.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's neat that you can make those decisions that way, and that you can look at these subsections and, for example, there are 53 red vampires. You can make mono red vampires.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing is necessarily keeping you from that. It'd be interesting to see exactly how that would be built. Vampires with absolutely no black.
Yeah, I mean, I actually have a very similar deck that I think actually was inspired by you there, J-Ro. I actually built, right. I built Bant Fairies a while back, because I wanted to actually play some of the green fairies and not play any of the black ones. I just figured it'd be kind of a... And I really wanted to play... damn it, what's his name? Olivio, Oathsworn Sentinel, as one of my commanders, just because he provides your board with some protection in case of a board wipe, which happens an awful lot in my playgroup. So the ability to play a bunch of fairies, play, and then also have access to green's overrun effects was a big deal for me. Is the fact that you don't normally get to mess with that with fairies EDH in EDH, especially with black and blue. So the ability to add green was definitely interesting. And then I just added white in there because I wanted to play Livio instead of playing a Sultai fairy. I mean, yes, I could play Sultai fairies, but, you know, that kind of defeated the point, right, for me. I wanted to try to play some of the fairies that are in white, which there are only a couple in there, and most, I think all of them are in there. Maybe, but yeah, you know, it just that's another perfect example of just taking a taking a creature type that, you know, you typically would think falls under, let's say, one category here, and then doing something completely different. I mean, on the Smiley Lich site, fairies don't even show up in white. So I think that should be pretty telling that they're or at least in the main identities. But yeah, there's 9 of them out there and I'm running like at least half of them.
Yeah. So they're not in the primarily supported types because there's 70, 25, and 15. There are 9 total, but they aren't, I believe their threshold's probably 10 to be considered part of that identity. I think that's what it looks like.
And yeah, I mean, some of the green ones that I'm not running are either really don't fit with the theme, like Iceling Leprechaun, which doesn't really do what I want it to do, or just some of the reserved list ones. So, but what I really liked were the fact that green provided a few Lord type effects. So again, there's a card, Fairy Noble. 1/2 fairy, if you're 2 and a green, has flying. Other fairy creatures you control get +0/+1, which, you know, may not be the most relevant line of text, but you can tap it to give other fairy creatures you control an additional +1/+0 until end of turn. I just kind of like the ability to give my fairies a bit of a boost, you know, to help get them over the top to try to win the game. And, you know, just fun little things like that to be able to, you know, try. But also be able to play Marileaf Pixie, too. I feel like that's a card a lot of people talk about, but actually be able to play it in a fairy tribal deck just feels really good.
Yeah. That's Simic colors, but actually being able to run it in, to run it alongside the other one, it's gotta be nice, and not have to be, like, Sultai or something.
Yeah, and that's what I really enjoy about this deck, is every time I play with people who I don't know, they always look at me, it's like, what the hell are you doing, right? You know, you should be playing black, and just, well, you know, I don't have to. There's a lot of really cool stuff out there. I could be running Rubinia Soulsinger, really, as my commander, who's a legendary fairy in Bant colors. But, again, Rubinia doesn't do what I want to do with that deck, which is steal creatures. That's not really what I want to do with the deck. I wanted to be able to run Livio in my command zone, to be able to protect my stuff. And, of course, Kaidel's the only other legendary partner who you can play for that three-color pairing with the mono-white commander. So even though Kaidel really doesn't do anything for the deck, really, just mostly in their freaking colors, I think it allows me to, you know, kind of sneak in, like, it's sneaky tribal in a way. It's that it's not a legendary fairy out there running a whole bunch of other fairies. Yes, I am running the Lord effects. I'm running Scion of Una, but I can also run something like Scrib Ranger and Scrib Sprites. So, you know, just a fun little deck that really just defies expectations, even for tribes that have gotten a little bit more support. Although I know people have been complaining and really wanted a fairy tribal commander for years, so I think we can kind of put a pin in that one for right now.
Yeah, I think so. I'm thinking about now, you're talking about an under-supported tribe in somewhat different colors. Now there actually is some support for cephalids, but before it was confirmed that cephalids were coming back in new capacity, I started brewing a deck, and again looking for a commander that does what the deck wants rather than a commander that is in the creature type. That's where I made my Esper Ink Defense deck. I'm still working on it, actually, but so that has a commander that's on the reserve list, but the reason why that's the commander is because it's an Esper colors, so I could have Inklings from So Inklings from Strixhaven, as well as the a lot of the fog effects from White and Black, and run Cephalids in blue. And then I just got the car of the commander altered to be Zoidberg doing the ink defense.
Nice Futurama reference right there.
Oh yeah. Well, the whole deck is designed around Zoidberg. It's my Zoidberg deck.
That's fair, yeah. Especially with Cephalids.
Unfortunately, I haven't finished it. There's some cards that'll be coming in from, or that I'll be slotting in from New Capenna, but it just, it's not on my to build list right now. I have the pieces of it, but I have to figure out how I want to negotiate what card draw and spot removal looks like for it.
For sure. So I think to wrap up our episode here today, J-Ro, I'm sure the listeners out there have taken a listen to some of the stuff we've talked about here today and definitely thought, and I mean, I hope they've thought, hey, you know, that sounds like a really cool idea. I really like J-Ro's Homunculus deck or MJ's Siren deck, or, you know, it's like, and I feel inspired to do something like that. What is some advice you would give to the intrepid listeners out there who want to give this kind of stuff a try? What are some of the things you would recommend they look for in trying to build a deck around an undersupported tribe? And what are some of the things that you think that they should keep in mind when trying to build that deck so that they still feel like the deck's getting somewhere?
First thing I would look for is, are there at least 20 members of that tribe? That would be something you find on the Smiley Lich database. Second thing is, are there members of that tribe that do jobs that a deck needs? Because that's a way to sort of work them in and get additional members of the tribe, or work in some other ways to interact with that tribe or display what that tribe does. So in every deck, I usually pack 20 cards of win cons or general synergy. but with those cards, I don't want to go too far into what, or I don't want to have like unimpactful cards included as part of that. So if I can, I try to merge them into other things the deck does. For example, I have a dog deck, and Rambunctious Mutt goes into the spot removal slot because it's a naturalize on a stick with a dog. So it counts as a dog tribal member, but it also doesn't have to be one of my 20 general cards. So that allows me to play more things like anthem effects. I would look at, how does your tribe do those jobs in a way that is unique to your tribe? So the elephant deck being resistant to wrath effects rather than actually being wrathful because they're peaceful animals makes a lot of sense for that tribe. The Jin deck, turning creatures into random other things, makes a lot of sense because that's what Jins do. They grant wishes, but in unforeseeable ways. So trying to find ways to do what a deck needs to do in a way that is unique to your tribe is how you give them that extra little bit of flavor. The Stater deck provides mana for every deck, or for every player. So instead of ramping itself, it ramps the table because it wants there to be a giant party. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. And that's the same thing I did with my Siren tribal deck, even though I actually didn't have the threshold of 20 creature cards there. So you can, again, do that even with less than 20 creature cards. But yeah, it does help to have that kind of thread between them. I mean, for instance, I looked up Yetis, and they run in three colors, and they have nothing to do with each other. So in some cases, it's easier to work with them than others. But if you can find the nice sweet spot or figure out that one thing that ties them all together, it can be a really cool deck idea.
The members don't necessarily have to have anything with each other. Like, the homunculus stack, they have nothing to do with each other. They just happen to be homunculi. I could have made the same deck with say blue zombies. There are 78 blue zombies. I could have made the same deck with them. But the feeling of the deck is that I am transmuting the homunculi into something else. And turning zombies into something else doesn't have that same feeling of this is a creature that was made scientifically to have experiments put on it.
Okay.
So a big part of that deck is the aesthetic rather than the creatures themselves because they just happen to be homunculi.
Fair enough.
The members don't have to have anything to do with each other if you are going to take them in a new or weird direction.
Okay, yeah. So I'm taking a look at some of the creature types with less than 20 creatures that have been printed, and you'd actually find some very popular ones that fall under this category. Again, I'm going to be looking straight at squirrels, which actually only have 13 and yet have 3 legendary creatures. Obviously, one of them is Silver Border, but we're not going to talk about that here. The fact is you have only 13 squirrels, but you have a lot of ways to create squirrel tokens. So I think that's really where that takes off. You have ATOGs, which only have 12, but go across all 5 colors and do have a legendary commander that cares about ATOGs. But again,
so I like how you mention the token. That's something where you probably would need to go into Scryfall and check instants and sorceries and such, because there are additional ways to get members of your tribe that way.
Mm-hmm.
But it is worth noting that if you're looking for tribal synergies like Reflections of Lachara, they will not trigger that.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, so you're going to need something like a Maskwood Nexus or what's the other card I'm thinking of?
Trigger because you're not casting a spell of that type.
Well, yeah, for Reflection, it's a Lajara, but if you're just trying to get creatures that are your creature type, things like Maskwood Nexus would work perfectly for that. So you can just create tokens that don't have to necessarily be the tokens you need and then use other ways to be able to turn them into the tokens you need. So just fun little things you can do with these sorts of undersupported tribes if they don't create a token specifically for that creature type.
Yep. And just because a legendary creature doesn't exist for that type doesn't mean that you can't take a legendary in that type and get it altered to be something that reflects it. Like with my Cephala deck, that was a human creature, but I altered it to be Zoidberg because Zoidberg is a humanoid creature.
Yep.
And also because it's hilarious looking. One of the things that I've been doing is my Pokedex project where I have Fox Noctum alter my commanders into Pokemon. In some cases, I've even built decks based on the Pokemon.
Nice.
But that's a subject for a different...
So yeah, I mean, really, I think where we're going at here is, again, trying to find something that really speaks to you, and then just building around the creature types. Like, I'm even looking right now at various different things. And one that really caught my eye because they do something very similar are basilisks. You can basically run mono green basilisks and basically say, you know, a lot of them have death touch or they have those, you know, pseudo death touch, kind of the Gorgon Recluse clause here where, you know, if it deals combat damage to a creature, that creature dies at the end of combat. So you could even run some kind of weird, like, mono-green basilisk lure effect sort of thing here. You could run Finn, the Fang Bear, if you wanted to as your commander, because half of them have death touch. So just fun little things you can do like there. Or, yeah, there's 9 kobolds out there. There's definitely something you can do with those. That is a kobold tribal deck. So, and you even have a legendary commander if you'd like to do that. Actually, a couple of them. So, you know, just there are things you can do to work around the quote unquote downsides of these tribes. I think all it requires is just the desire to just, you know, make some mistakes, and, you know, just like Ms. Frizzle off the Magic School Bus said, just, you make mistakes and get messy. So I think that's really the takeaway from this episode.
Absolutely. And make mistakes, get messy, have fun.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what EDH is all about. Mm-hmm. All right, J.R., I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. It's been awesome having you. It's been awesome really talking about these decks and really learning about how we both actually inspired each other to, you know, really go outside the box and build decks that we wouldn't normally have ever tried to brew before.
Yeah, it's really cool, and that's how you know that we're good friends and that we are awesome contemporaries and we have a high respect for each other.
For sure, for sure. And again, if the lovely folks out there would like to hear more about people building tribal decks, could you tell them a little bit about where they can find Quote of Arms?
So the Quote of Arms podcast is on it's on Spotify, it's on Apple Podcasts, it's on pretty much anywhere you can find podcasts. It's also on my YouTube. My YouTube is bit.ly/unsummons.
Or, I mean, I'm sure if you also look at just on YouTube and you put an unsummoned skull, it'll show up, right?
Yeah. The reason why I made the bit.ly is because once you get up to 100 followers, you can make your own URL. I was impatient.
That's okay. The fact is, it's a really cool podcast. If you're interested in hearing more about tribal synergies, hearing about people talk about their favorite tribes, you should definitely go check that out. At some point, I will be trying to make a point of guesting on that show to talk more about the Siren tribal deck, even though I think we kind of beat it to death, actually, here in this episode. So, I'm not sure how much there is to say for that episode eventually, but it will happen at some point.
Yeah. We talk about, so on the podcast, we talk about it differently. So, yeah, it'll be a similar talk, but it'll be a very different one because it'll be specifically focused on that, on what the members are like, how you wound up building it, how somebody could do something like that, and then a little bit on what is so special about them to you.
Fair enough. All right. Well, if you're interested in hearing any of the previous episodes on the MTG in Quarantine podcast, you can find those on the usual podcast outlets. That's your Googles, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocket Cast, Pocket Cast, MTG Cast, Overcast, Breaker, and a million others. I never remember all of them, but if it's a major podcast outlet, odds are you can find my podcast on there. You can also find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. If you find the happy-looking Ulamog wearing a pair of headphones, you found the right place. I'd like to utilize this opportunity to give another huge shout out and thank you to the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. So another thank you to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals, Coach J-Ro, and Geek Beardly for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast, where our mantra is EDH, community, now and always. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.